You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Fig Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
Hey now, you're a rock star. Get your game on. Get paid. Welcome back to the Second Print Comics Nation. You know, every once in a while, I'll be like going through the radio stations because I'm a millennial boomer. So, you know, I go ahead and press the seek button. No, it's the tune button on my car radio that is lacking a CD ejector thing, whatever those used to be called. And, you know, you'll come across these like oldie stations. And what I realized was that I was jamming out to All Star by Smash Mouth. And I realized that I was listening to oldies rock. And immediately I was like, oh, my God, this is my life now. So now you all have to feel that existential dread with me. But with that existential dread comes some hope. Today we're going to be covering all that's going on in comics, entertainment, movies, and more. But before we get into this entertainment multiverse of madness, we got to go ahead and bring on Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, how is life?
Life is good, Remzo. I wanted to make so many comments in your little intro there about how you're a millennial boomer.
What's the CD thing called?
Well, it's a disc man when it's portable, but I think it's just the disc player. I think it's just the CD player.
Does your car have one?
My current car does not, because I bought this car in 2018 brand new, but the previous vehicle that I owned that I bought in, I think, 2002, that did have one. And I even still had like tapes for a while, and I had one of these things that you plug in so you can play a tape in your car.
With the little wire that comes out and plugs into your, that comes into your Zune.
Yep. So yeah, but the reason I didn't interrupt you is because I actually didn't exist yet in the continuity of the show. You know, as a lifelong podcaster, I came out of the womb podcaster.
1 million years.
I basically have been a lifelong podcaster because I have not shut up since the moment I was born, essentially, from what I understand. So I've been podcasting this whole time. I just didn't have the technology to share my personal podcast with the world until fairly recently. But yeah, no, in the continuity of the podcast, I don't even exist until you introduce me. So I'm just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting. But I will say,
called me a madman.
You know, I like Smash Mouth. I listened to Smash Mouth in the 90s when I was growing up. I don't think you were born yet when Smash Mouth came out. So maybe I should just concede at some point that some certain bands and music that I listened to in the 90s, it's going to be considered old to someone. And if people even younger than you are the ones driving music right now, too, because I worked on a freelance job this past weekend. It was a concert, right, in Las Vegas. And I could name literally of all the people that performed at this concert. There's a whole bunch of groups, whole bunch of artists. I had only heard of one of them before. The rest, I never even heard of, let alone like knew their music.
It was the band.
Have you heard of Dua Lipa?
That sounds like some type of angry white boy rap group.
I'm actually impressed. I'm actually proud of you that you don't know who that is. I don't even know who it was. I just know that she's an artist of some kind. And
it's a she.
It's a she, yeah. It's like some British pop star or something. I don't really know. But I did know she existed. But that's it. And every other artist, I didn't even know that their existence was something that was happening in the world. So if I'm at that point where all, and this, these are the popular artists of the day, apparently. So all these artists, all these bands, all the kids in the crowd were going nuts, singing the lyrics to all these songs of artists I never heard of. So maybe at some point I have to actually accept the fact that I'm a little bit older. Now I feel great. I feel wonderful. I'm a young 41, I would say, but I think the music-wise, times have passed me by, and I think I have to accept that. And maybe they pass you by too. You got like a dozen years on me here, and you don't even know who Dua Lipa is. Come on.
All my music tastes basically stop after the year 2014. Like I'm still listening to punk rock and stuff from like the early 2000s. Like I think that up to 2003, you actually had some really good stuff.
For me, it's about 2003. I think that's where it ends for me. And then, but for my dad, it's like 1959. I remember growing up, even like music that, even older music that I would start to learn about and get into, like music from the 70s, like Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, stuff like that, that I got into maybe in like middle school. My dad didn't even listen to that because it came out after his music clock stopped. Like,
I mean, you could tell me there was a band called Astigmatism and I would believe you.
There's not.
I mean, it probably is. I just pulled that out of nowhere. If there's not,
we should start it.
We're Astigmatism!
Second Prince Astigmatism.
We're kind of like The Cure and Depeche Mode, but not.
If they did a bunch of ketamine and lived in the 2021. That's our
That's band. Basically it. Yeah, that's basically it.
All right, well, if this comic book podcast thing doesn't work out, let's talk. I used to play the drums when in like fourth grade, and I can play a mean bongo. And I can sing karaoke music, so.
I can play some wicked spoons.
All right. Well, I think we have the start of a band, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But let's give this comic book thing a shot first. I think we're doing okay.
I want to ruin everyone's day with just one more fun fact. You know why Smash Mouth broke up, right?
I didn't even know Smash Mouth broke up. So, here I'm finding out that this horrible news live. I thought if nothing else, there's always the hope of another Smash Mouth tour coming through my town. And now you're telling me not so much.
Well, they actually have thought about coming back, and they were going to come back and do a couple of concerts, but then COVID happened, so they couldn't. But the reason why Smash Mouth stopped recording was because the lead singer's son got terminal cancer. Oh, so no. He stopped going on tour, and then he died. And then he was like, I can't do music anymore. My life is miserable. So they broke up.
Wow. That's a much more depressing story than I was getting ready to laugh. And yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, let's get into some fun shit.
Yeah.
As you all know, here on the Second Print Comics, the last week of the month, we go ahead and do a potpourri episode where Mark and I go ahead and just talk about the awesome shit going on in the world that we want to talk about.
You take a big whiff of all the comic book content out there, of all the comic book potpourri, whether it's TV, movies, the books we're reading, what have you. And the best part about this, Remzo, I don't really need to prepare for these shows. I just talk about what I'm actually watching in real life or what I'm actually reading in real life. I don't need to go out of my way to study and take notes and all the stuff I do for regular episodes. So I'm a fan of these episodes. And based on the feedback, our fans are as well. So, you know, we're here to serve.
Definitely. I want to start things up on a higher note than knowing that the lead singer of Smash Mouth's son died. And that's the reason why the band broke up. But I have a question for you, Mark. Have you been going to see movies in theaters, or have you been watching everything on demand?
A little bit of both. I have no concerns about going to the theater. So when given the opportunity for a theater, I will usually go to the theater, especially for, you know, like these comic book movies that are coming out. That's when I really started hitting the theaters. I think with a vengeance again, when Black Widow came out. When Shang-Chi came out, Shang-Chi wasn't even available on demand, but you know, movies like that, I want to see in the theater. Even price not being a difference, I probably would want to see them in the theater anyway, but especially like movies like Black Widow, for example, if I'm going to spend $30 to watch it at home, dude, I have a Cinemark membership. I can go for like, well, I get one free movie a month, which is a great deal, by the way, and we don't make any profit off this, but if you do go to movies a lot, the Cinemark membership is an amazing deal because it's $10 a month. And again, I should be getting a commission of some kind for this because I could probably sell some of these right now, but it's $10 a month. And you get a free ticket every month. So it's already free, basically, if you would go to the movie anyway. And you don't have to use that free ticket that month. I could use it in a year. So you can
roll over.
Yeah, so you can really roll over. So you can build them up and wait till a month when you have like three movies you want to go see. And then any other ticket you buy is at like the 20% discount. And you end up building points. And yeah, it basically, even when I pay for a movie, I end up getting pretty cheap tickets that are not that much is the point. So for me, it's actually cheaper to go to the movie. Even if I'm used my free ticket already, it's cheaper for me to go to the movie, even with my wife, for two of us to go to the movie than to pay the $30 to watch it at home. So it's just become a no brainer.
Yeah, I had that when I lived in an area that that had Cinemarks. Where I'm at now, we've got AMC in a place called Movie Tavern. Movie Tavern's actually pretty nice. It's not like Alamo Drafthouse quality. I think it's a step down from like Alamo Drafthouse, but it's still better than AMC. AMC, I'll go there if they have a movie that I really want to see that Movie Tavern's not showing. But anyway, I bring this up because now we're getting to the point where people are going back to theaters again, but we've become kind of spoiled with the fact that they're still doing a lot of same day and early releases for the most part. So now fans are really leveraging whether or not they want to punish a film because they don't like it, or whether they really want to go out and support a movie by whether or not they actually go and pay the box office price for it. And I feel like it's one of those weird situations where you could really tell the level of excitement for somebody. Now, the only reason I didn't go see Suicide Squad in theaters is because I was traveling and I have HBO Max, so I was like, you know what, I'll just go ahead and watch it here. But I agree, like for Shang-Chi,
that one I am really glad that I saw in the theater. I saw it again on HBO Max at home. I pulled a Remzo and watched it like twice in a week, but that's because
it's
a
good movie.
It was my birthday the day that I saw it on the movie, so we had already been, you know, we had already gone to brunch. I was under the influence of some things, so you know, I like some the stuff. Movie was awesome, but I was also like, I don't remember all the details of that, so that's why I watched it a second time.
But anyway, so yeah, now you have more people that are flexing their, you know, their free market powers to whether or not a movie is really going to succeed or fail. And right now, Venom seems to be one of those movies. Venom, the first film, really took a lot of people by storm. Coming out the same year as Black Panther and Avengers Infinity War, came out right between all those. And everyone was like, a Venom movie without Spider-Man coming from Sony? How's that going to do? And it got pretty much the same comparable box office amount, and people liked it. The critics didn't like it, but fans liked it. They liked Tom Hardy. They wanted to see Venom. And for the most part, the movie delivered on what you expected. And, you know, it was quickly greenlit for a sequel. They showed Woody Harrelson as Cletus Cassidy, a.k.a. Carnage, at the end of the first film. So everyone kind of knew what the sequel was going to be about. And then when the trailer for Venom 2 was released about a month and a half ago, it was just basically confirming what everybody thought. It was a direct sequel to the first film. Everything that happened directly gets readdressed again, and this time you've got Woody Harrelson, but this time he's not wearing a stupid wig. They actually did something with his real hair. So that comes out this weekend by the time people are listening to this. And you've got a lot of people, I don't know why, it's like, I feel, and I've had a lot of criticisms of people who are like real super fans of the MCU. Now, don't get me wrong, the MCU is great, but that doesn't mean you need to punish all non-MCU films. So you have a lot of MCU people who are like, why should I see it? It's not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then others who are like, well, you know, it's Sony, so I don't really want to go pay to go see a Sony movie of Tom Hardy. I'm just going to go watch it from home.
I can understand the concept of not caring as much if you think it doesn't tie into the MCU, if like you're super dedicated fan to those specific movies. I can see that, but I can't see caring which giant mega corporation produced the movie. That seems absurd. They're all giant mega corporations. They all make all our entertainment. Why would you care which which one it comes from?
I mean, Sony doesn't have the best track record for really good movies. I mean, if you really look at it, the only film franchises that are keeping Sony alive are Spider-Man and James Bond. And by the time No Time to Die comes out, which I think is a week after Venom comes out, I mean, they've lost so much money in terms of marketing that movie and everything else. It'll actually be a struggle to see whether or not Eon Productions and I think MGM actually make money from it. And I think since then, Apple has bought the film rights to James Bond. So, I mean, it's going to be kind of a shit show. I think it'll still be profitable. It's James Bond. There has not been a non-profitable James Bond film. Even some of the low marks of the franchise have still done considerably well, bringing in plenty of what they needed to reach the overhead during their opening box office weekend. But, you know, it's like with Venom, it's the little movie that could. And for the most part, I think, you know, my biggest issue right now with Venom is I think that the title is kind of kitschy. You know, let there be carnage. Like, I'm like, oh, you couldn't have come up with something better. I would have been happier if just like Venom 2. But it's like,
it's a little kitschy. That's fair.
Yeah, it's a PG-13, or is this one R?
I think it's, I'm not positive.
I think this one's R.
I do believe it's R, but I'll look it up. I'll do some live research while you.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you have this like, you know, B-rated sci-fi horror film.
No, it's PG-13.
It's PG-13. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, I didn't think Venom needed the R rating the first time.
It doesn't need, was the first one R?
The first one was PG-13 and people were like, oh, well, like, you know, how could you have that without, you know, without Spider-Man, how could you do it without the R rating? I didn't feel like it was missing anything with the R rating.
It doesn't need it. It's not necessary. I think, you know, a lot of the rumors about movies that are coming out, well, from Marvel, well, we know that Deadpool 3 is confirmed, and there's also rumors of a Wolverine movie being in production. That's still very much in the rumor stage, but those are the two that they're talking about having R ratings. And for both of those,
once you go R, you can't go back.
You can go from
PG-13 to R, but you can't go from R back down to PG-13. It's like a lot of the DC animated films. You know, DC was the first animated studio to put out PG-13 stuff. Now, a lot of anime films from Japan had been pushing the PG-13 labeling in the United States and Europe for a while, but DC was the first one to do that. And then with The Dark Knight Returns part one and part two, those were actually like R-rated, so like, you know, they can escalate it, but you usually don't de-escalate at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be like going from going from a Nintendo Wii down to the Super Nintendo one day. It's like, well, you can't go backwards, you can't go that way.
Yeah, but the strangest thing about this movie, and I love Venom. I'm going to be there opening night to go see Venom at the Movie Tavern out here in Milwaukee. But, you know, what their marketing has been doing is they've actually been trying to jump on a lot of the bandwagon effect you've been seeing from Spider-Man No Way Home. And you've had a lot of tweets going out from Sony and the official Venom Let There Be Carnage pages across social media telling people it's like the universe is expanding. And, you know, a lot of people are throwing out this Spider-Man connection. I know with Morbius, which I feel is, I think it's coming out in January 2022. Morbius is the next one part of like this Venom-verse. And then later in 2022, you have Kraven the Hunter. We know that in Morbius, you see who's the guy that plays Batman?
Who's also Michael Venom. Keaton.
Yeah, Michael Keaton. We know that Michael Keaton's Vulture.
I'm impressed that you called him the guy who plays Batman, because that is who Michael Keaton is to me. That's who he was growing up.
He will always be Batman.
It's still his finest role.
It will never change. But like Michael Keaton's Vulture is going to be in Morbius. We know that.
You know, just to give you a little history lesson, because I know you were not even a twinkle at the time, but that was actually really controversial at the time when Michael Keaton was cast as Batman.
Because he was a comedian and
exactly.
He had just done Beetlejuice. So people didn't really see the fact that this comedian could be Bruce Wayne Batman.
Correct. Yeah. Well, you know the whole story, so I don't need to explain it. But yeah, I mean, he was already a great comedic actor. But he was a great actor. And I mean, I think that's very clear now with his, you know, the last 30 extra other years of his acting. It's very obvious. I think he's one of our finest. But at the time, he was really just known as like, oh, he's a great comedy actor. Sure. But can he do this? And the answer is fuck yes, he can. And I'm really excited to bounce around a little bit about the Flash movie coming up and see more of him. But we talked about that a couple months ago.
Yeah, but going back to Keaton, like Keaton is now like the official glue that's kind of keeping everything together. So this will they won't they thing, especially now since the concept of like the real multiverse is going to be addressed for Spider-Man and Spider-Man No Way Home. My question to you, Mark, is do these films need Spider-Man to continue, or should they just keep the track that they're going on, which is they're their own little separate universe of Spider-Man characters, but they will not interact with Spider-Man? Or do you think somehow, some way, Sony is going to get him to actually brawl with, you know, Tom Hardy and Jared Leto and Aaron Taylor Johnson?
Well, I don't think it needs it. Because I think Venom kind of proved that. And I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on the first Venom were.
I liked it.
I liked it, too. I mean, I didn't. Yeah. It's not the greatest movie I've ever seen, but I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was very well done.
It was better than Topher Grace's First appearance of Venom in Spider-Man 3.
I like Graceland.
Topher Grace.
I'm going to start calling him Topher Graceland.
It's Eric from That 70s Show. It's Eric Foreman. That's all he'll ever be.
Tom Hardy was definitely a superior Eddie Brock, and he wasn't really the same Eddie Brock in the comic, so it's not because he portrayed the character as I thought it should be, necessarily. It was just really good, and he's an amazing actor, and I didn't at any point think, like, man, if only we had Spider-Man tied into this origin. So I think it can build itself up as its own thing, and it already has, and the fact that the sequel's coming and with a lot of excitement has kind of proven that. As far as, like, the greater Venom verse goes, like, yeah, it's kind of weird in a way to have all these characters that are known by comic book people as Spider-Man characters, like Morbius, like Kraven the Hunter, to have them all interacting with each other and not have Spider-Man. So I don't think it's necessary, but I do think we want it. I do think it's something that, you know, in the back of every comic book fan's mind, it's like, okay, like, Spider-Man's got to interact with these characters at some point. And, you know, the deal between Sony and Marvel, you know, we kind of know the deal, but neither of us are the lawyers that have read the fine print. So, I mean, I'm sure there is a way that they can work it to actually have that happen. They have just wanted to keep them separate. I don't know if that's more Marvel wanting to keep it separate, more Sony, but that has been how it's been so far. But I do got to think, and we don't know necessarily, you know, I think Tom Holland is on for like three more movies at this point with his
deal. Well, remember, when he negotiates a contract, he's not negotiating with Sony and Marvel Studios through Disney. He is a Sony contracted actor, mm-hmm. and then Sony goes and negotiates with Marvel.
Right. They negotiate his appearances in those movies.
Yeah, so like he is there by proxy. He's not there directly because of the way the contract works. And there's one theory out there that at the end of No Way Home, because they're doing a type of, you know, one more day, brand new day scenario with this film, as we discussed a month back, there's this idea that in order to reestablish the proper timeline while at the same time getting to a logical conclusion of the whole identity erasure thing, what they're going to do is they're going to stick him in the Sony Spider-Man universe. So that way, everything that happened in the MCU with Spider-Man did happen, except now he will be a character independent of all future Marvel movies, while at the same time being the same Peter Parker Spider-Man in other films, such as, you know, a potential third Venom movie, a potential Morbius sequel, and definitely maybe a Kraven the Hunter film. So they will not even be Spider-Man films. They will be Spider-Man character films with Spider-Man.
Hmm. Kraven the Hunter featuring Spider-Man.
Well, what's really a fuck you to Marvel is the fact that Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played Quicksilver in Avengers Age of Ultron, is coming on to be Kraven the Hunter. So the fact that Sony went out of their way to already poach a character who has already, I mean, poach an actor who's already been an MCU character in, you know, another competing universe, which somehow shares the Spider-Man umbilical cord. It's Sony basically saying, we can do what the fuck we want, and we don't work on your terms, you work on ours.
Yeah, and that's why at the end of the day, I think there is too much money in a Tom Hardy Venom, Tom Holland Spider-Man crossover of some kind. So I don't know if it's going to be a totally separate movie, if it's what maybe Venom 3 turns into. I got to think, because they can make it happen, that they're going to make it happen, because it's too big a nerd out moment. Even though this Venom's origin is not tied into Spider-Man at all, it doesn't need to be for fans to nerd out over it. And I think it's definitely a matchup we need to see, whether it's versus, whether it's team up. Maybe it'll just be a Secret War type thing. Maybe they'll do Secret Wars and they'll make, and maybe Marvel will make some kind of deal to bring in Venom for some appearance. I don't know, but I think it's got to happen one way or another. I'm just not sure how it's all going to play out business wise or legal wise, but I got to think at some point in the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to see those two actors playing those two characters on screen together. Don't know how or why, or I don't know. I know why. It's because of money, because people like me will give them money for that. That's why. I'm not exactly sure how, but I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, let's just look at what they're doing for the sequel. It's a 90-minute runtime, so it's shorter than a lot of people expect. It's actually shorter than the first Venom film.
I love 90-minute movies.
It gets to the point. Yeah, it gets to the point. It's what I need to see. But I mean, the fact that you've got Woody Harrelson, who came on to sign on for the character around the same time the first movie was being productioned. He signed on to be Cletus Cassidy for the sequel around the same time the first film was being produced. I mean, he's not he's not like a C-list actor or anything. Like Woody Harrelson, like him and Tom Hardy, they're gonna make Sony some money next weekend. They're totally banking on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will contribute to the fund. So I think I will be in a different country by that point. But for all the times I've been in Mexico, I have always been able to see the movies that I wanted to see when they came out. So hopefully Venom is the same.
Yeah. But I mean, Venom,
and it's going to be even cheaper, Remzo. You know how cheap movies
there,
are.
There you go. There you go. It's going to work out. So, I mean, Venom is an example of something that's able to compete with the MCU. While the ratings might not be as equitable, like the money at the end of the day is what keeps this going. And, you know, for the most part, I mean, Marvel, other than the films, other than the Disney Plus series, they've been more of a hit or a miss with some things. I think one area that people ignore Marvel on, where they've made a lot of flaws, has been some of the stuff in their animated department. Almost all of their animated shows on Disney XD, Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, Spider-Man, those have all basically been lampooned. Nobody fucking likes them. But then you've got some more, like, I'll call them like offhand series. Like we talked about Hellstrom at one point, I think during one of our Journey into Mystery Zoom calls with fans. I was telling people, like, you know, Hellstrom could have been a good show, but it was kind of like a failure to launch type of thing. Since then, Marvel has put out MODOK. Have you watched MODOK at all?
I have not watched any MODOK. I've actually been scared off of watching it by our friend Eric July and his rants against it. So I've listened to him talk about it enough that it made me not want to even try it.
MODOK, I watched the first four episodes of it, and I think I enjoyed it. I think. It just felt really, really unnecessary. And, you know, there was an Offenders TV show that they had been teasing for years where they were going to be like the shitty version of the Defenders. And it was going to have Squirrel Girl and a bunch of other stuff. For some weird reason, Marvel really wants to make Squirrel Girl a thing, but she's never really been a thing. You had Runaways and all this other stuff.
I can see how in their minds that could become some kind of pop culture hit. And I could actually see
if you have to force it, like Squirrel Girl's not like Gwenpool. Gwenpool started as the alternate cover, a variant cover of an issue of Deadpool. And she was so popular, she became an actual character, just like Spider-Gwen. Like they were just so popular, the fans manifested them into
something
existence.
About those Gwen variants that everyone loves.
The Gwen variants bring in the money, but like
she's like one
Girl.
Of those one shortlist characters that are never allowed to come back. But they never said we couldn't have alternate universe variants.
Exactly, and she's bringing in the money. So like when it comes to some of these side characters and other like you know loose TV and animated projects, Marvel does not have the best track record that a lot of people might excuse them for. But the one thing that I am really excited for is an R-rated animated TV series coming from Jason Sudeikis and Olivia Munn, Hitmonkey. Do you have any clue who Hitmonkey is?
I literally heard about Hitmonkey today, I think, when I don't know if it was you or someone else in the fan zone that posted the article.
It was me and Joe talking about it. I posted about it, and I guess Joe knows. Joe's one of the guys in our second print fan zone. He knows the animator for it.
Hashtag so, Joe knows.
Hashtag Joe knows. So, like, it is fucking hilarious. Hitmonkey was first introduced, I think, in 2013, 2014 in the Deadpool series. Hitmonkey is basically a monkey hitman. And that's all you need to know.
That is all I need to know because I'm in.
Yeah, they have not brought him back since. They gave him like a short-lived series of one shots or maybe a limited series at one point soon after. So for like 8 years, we haven't seen Hitmonkey. But, you know, there was always that potential there. At one point, Hitmonkey was even rumored to either be featured in the 2015 Deadpool game or get his own video game. But the Hitmonkey trailer, if you haven't watched it, go just YouTube Hitmonkey Hulu. It looks fucking wild. It's like Archer and Invincible had a baby with a simian and Hitmonkey was born.
Archer and Invincible are probably two of the best animated series for different reasons of the last 20 years. So if that's remotely accurate to what the series ends up being, I am sure that I will enjoy it. So I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah. So those are just a few of the things that that I wanted to bring up. I did catch the first episode of Why the Last Man on FX through Hulu. Why the Last Man is based off the critically acclaimed graphic novel series about a universe where suddenly all the men on Earth just died, and now the planet is run by women, and there happens to be one dude that lives. And I watched that. I won't go too much into spoilers because I know a bunch of people are getting ready to like binge it, especially as a few more episodes come out. But like, it's, I have a feeling that like Legion on FX, it's going to be one of those shows you have to watch to build up because they might reward you later. I can't necessarily say that I'm a fan of it right now, but I'm willing to see at least the first season to really come to a conclusion. And I think a lot of these FX shows, they get a bad rep because FX produces so many like very like niche dark comedy type of shows and dramas that no one can really tell whether they're worth investing their time in. But, you know, like I'm a big fan of Legion. I think Legion on FX is a really underrated like hit on television. It was brilliant television when it was out. You know, it was not the X-Men glamour fest that a lot of people thought it was going to be, but it did really, you know, reward people who watched it all the way through. And I really like those American crime shows like The People versus O.J. Simpson, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, Impeached is coming out in about a month. So I think, you know, FX, if you like FX shows, this is very much an FX show. If you like Why the Last Man, and I'll be honest, I never read the graphic novel. I can't tell you whether or not it's super accurate to the source material, but I'm happy whenever a comic book gets adapted into a TV show. I'm just glad to see it. And this is one of those that have been rumored to either be a TV show or a Netflix series or a movie for a while. So the fact that now it's actually out there in reality, maybe now this will actually convince me to go back and read a few of the first volumes of the comic.
My experience with Why the Last Man is that when I got back into comics again around 2014, 2015-ish or so, I did a deep dive on a lot of stuff. I've talked about before in the past that I did a deep dive on. First of all, I caught up on all my Savage Dragons. I read all of Invincible up until that point, and then I finished Invincible like live as it happened. Same thing with Walking Dead, which we're going to be talking about in a couple weeks. But I was also in the search for like, I was doing a lot of like Google searches, like best comic stories of the last 10 years kind of stuff, and trying to find, you know, some of the stories that I should check out. And Why the Last Man was one of those. Now, it was one that I downloaded on Hoopla. Like, I just downloaded a bunch on Hoopla. And that was one that I read like the first issue, and I wouldn't say it was bad. I think it's probably good. It's just sometimes you're not in the right mood at the right time for the right story, and it just bored me a little bit. Like the story is interesting, the characters seem interesting. It probably goes in a better direction, but I wasn't in the spot, and I have like a bunch of other stuff that I downloaded that I was reading. So if something didn't really capture me right away, I would be pretty quick to move on. So I never really got all the way into it. I did sample it, I guess you could say, and wasn't sucked in right away. But the fact that it's out now as a series, I kind of would want to read it before I watch the series. So I may circle back, and we may even look at that in sometime in the coming months.
I always got confused because I thought Why the Last Man was Kamandi, the last boy on Earth.
Kamandi. Oh, no, those are very different.
Yeah, they're very different. Well, I mean, it's the same concept.
Same concept. Yeah. Also, what's that?
Was it Kamandi or Kamadi? I think it's Kamandi.
Kamandi.
Yeah, Kamandi, the last boy on Earth, and he's friends with like a tiger and shit, and he fights mutants.
Children of Men, that's the movie with basically the same plot as well. Although I think that's when everyone stopped.
Children of Men is with Clive Owen, and it's where people can't get pregnant anymore.
I guess that's a very different plot now that I think about it.
That's crazy. I watched that movie in 2013, and I'm like, this shit would never happen. And like 8 years later, I'm like, now shit. I'm like,
well,
that stuff from Children of Men might actually fucking happen.
It's quite possible. We're on an interesting path, that's for sure.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. But here's my strategy, Mark. I'm not watching many series right now. I'm not going to go back and watch MODOK. I'm watching Warrior, which is a Bruce Lee adapted series on HBO Max. That's pretty good. If you like Breaking Bad, Ozark, it's like that with Kung Fu. I think after I'm done with this, because I've been binging it, so the second season I should be done with that by the end of the week. I think after this, what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna wait like a month or so for a bunch of episodes of Why the Last Man to rack up, and I'm just gonna binge it, because I have a feeling like for some shows that I've watched, it's like if I was watching this in real time week by week, I might not like this. But you know, if it's a show like Ozark, I love Ozark. But when I first tried to watch Ozark when it was live on TV, I couldn't do
it. Ozark was live on TV?
Well,
I don't think it was ever live on TV. I think it was always on Netflix.
Was it on Netflix? Well,
but I know what you mean, because even Ozark for me was actually a slow start as well. And it is one of those things that if it was week to week, maybe I wouldn't come back the second week, which is why it's kind of different.
I'm sorry. I was getting Ozark confused with Breaking Bad. When Breaking Bad was week to week, I couldn't do it. But when I went and binge watched Breaking Bad, I loved it. And it's like Ozark. If Ozark was a show which was week to week, I don't think I would have done it. But when I binged Ozark on Netflix, I finished the first three seasons in like a week.
Breaking Bad was my transition from live TV to only watching something in binge mode, essentially. It was the last show. It's funny. I actually heard about the show, watched a couple episodes like you, like live, didn't really get into it. Then later, like years later, heard how great it was, said, okay, I'll give it a second chance. And that's when I binged the whole thing up until season 5, which wasn't out yet at the time. So then I transitioned back to watching season 5, episode by episode, with the week gap in between. And that I actually really enjoyed, because by that point I was so into the show. And it reminded me of, I think the last show like that for me was Lost, where an episode would happen, it would end in some shocking manner, and the next week I would be nerding out, theorizing, talking to friends about it, going on message boards. And Breaking Bad was one of those shows that like everybody you know was watching. It wasn't just one of those nerdy shows. So for Breaking Bad, I could talk to anybody I ran into, basically, would be able to talk about Breaking Bad. So it was really the last show that I think I will probably ever watch in non-binge format. But I'm glad I did.
Yeah. So that's all I've got, except the last thing to mention on the TV and movie news section, season 3 of The Boys for Amazon Prime just went ahead and wrapped up. This takes place almost immediately after the season finale for season 2, in which some characters are dead, some are alive. All the stuff that went on with Homelander's
just wrapped up
son
filming?
Just wrapped up filming.
Okay. Cause I haven't even watched season 2 yet.
Oh, you haven't watched season 2?
I have a problem with series. I can't get into series. I need to be so into
season
series.
Season 2 now. of the Boys was like 8 episodes, and they weren't even like a full hour long.
Yeah, and after like 2, I wasn't into it. So like when I'm committing that much time, I need to be so sucked in. And I got to be honest, I didn't really love this season 1 that much. I thought it was a good show. I liked it. But when the season ended, I wasn't like, oh, I can't wait for another season. I was kind of like, I'm okay. So
I'm going to watch it because I feel invested in the show at this point, having watched season 1, season 2. My only issue is like their big thing is each season we're going to go ahead and increase the hype. It only can go as far as to when it just gets into like its old Yeller phase. And I feel like with season 3 of The Boys, it's really going to determine whether or not it keeps going, because I think a lot of people have just become desensitized to a lot of crazy shit that happens in that show. You know, it's like how I feel about The Flash right now. The Flash had a good couple of years and it was really fucking good. And when the Arrowverse was at its prime, The Flash was an awesome addition to it. But it's at the point now where all the stories are becoming kind of redundant. All the big stories have kind of been done. And it's like, you know, you should probably put the show out of its misery. I don't think The Boys is anywhere near that at this point, but the fact that they have done so much to try and shock the shit out of people, I really think the trailer, when that gets released, I think like January, February of 2022, that's really going to show people whether or not they up the ante or not. I think with a digital only show like The Boys, they could get away with more than like a show like The Flash, which is network TV. But it's at the same time where it's just like, you know, sometimes like just because you can keep going doesn't mean you have to. And I feel at the end of season 2 of The Boys, which I won't spoil it for you, but like a lot of loopholes that should have probably gone on for another season or so, they got tied up pretty cleanly. And I don't know where the next step is. So The Boys, we'll come back when the trailer's released and see what people think. But that's all I've got.
Well, maybe I'll go back and watch season 2, because now I feel a little bit of an obligation. I have to have some knowledge to discuss this stuff with you when the time comes. So
it's not an Invincible.
Now, Invincible, I couldn't stop watching. Invincible, and that was tough because it was week to week. So I guess that's not actually. I guess actually Breaking Bad is not the last show. I guess I technically did watch Invincible week to week.
Invincible was fucking awesome.
Invincible was amazing. Absolutely amazing. But yeah, maybe we can get into some of the books we're reading right now or that we have been reading lately. Before we move on from TV and film, we talked about it a few weeks ago in non-spoiler format. Is there, and now it's been enough time now, because if you haven't seen it by now, you don't care about spoilers. That's just a fact. That's evidenced by the fact you haven't seen it. Is there anything you want to elaborate on with Shang-Chi now that we can kind of free ourselves from the reins a little bit?
Shang-Chi was good. Like, I really did like it. It's probably, now I had recency bias. I think that was the term you used, because yes. I didn't want to just say it was in my top 10 Marvel films, but I can probably honestly say now that it's probably a solid 9 or 10. And mainly it's because I just love those Bruce Lee type films. And for me, like, I feel that Marvel's recent problem has been they've had a real hard time with two things. One, their phase 4 release calendar. I think phase 4 has been probably the sloppiest phase of Marvel. And I don't even think COVID has to do with that. I think the mix of prequels and Disney Plus show tie-ins and movies and everything else. I think that as much as you could blame the pandemic, it's at the point where it's like, no, this phase just feels kind of sloppy.
Because you got to kind of figure out, like, they're not being released in the order they take place. So each show or movie, you got to kind of like take a minute, and they let you know, they give you enough, you know, information to figure it out, but you got to go like, oh, so where exactly does this happen in the timeline? Not like the other, basically phase 1 through 3, maybe there's one exception, I'm not sure, but I guess Captain Marvel is a prequel technically, but other than that, all that was just chronological order essentially. So you could really just follow them and watch them as they came out, and you're getting the full story. Whereas now you got to be like, okay, this Captain America and Winter Soldier kind of took place before this. I think Shang-Chi's after that, and you got to kind of piece it together. Whereas Black Widow, it doesn't even seem like it belongs in this group of films other than the post-credits scene. So I would agree. It is a little, I don't know if sloppy is the word, but it's a little daunting if you're sort of a chronology buff.
I'll stick with sloppy. I am actually kind of disappointed with how they've done it. I think you can only blame the pandemic so much. I mean, it affected a lot of things, but this just feels wrong irregardless. But you know, while that's the negative, I'll say the pro is definitely, like, for a Marvel origin film, I think this was fantastic. And I mean, I still stand by it. I think Black Panther wasn't really an origin film, because we saw him and his origin basically in Captain America Civil War. But like, the only recent Marvel film where they introduced a new hero that I felt could really stand on its own was Captain Marvel. Whether you liked Captain Marvel or not, whether you like Brie Larson or not, and I don't like Brie Larson, I think Captain Marvel was a very good standalone origin film, especially of the MCU. I mean, my criticisms of MCU phase 1 through 3 was that for a lot of their films, they just felt like different versions of Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, a lot of people are like, well, you know, it's the box office popcorn formula of how you do a superhero origin story in the MCU. But like, it's really hard to break from that. And when they do, they have to lean on a bunch of other stuff to make it work. And I feel like with Shang-Chi, it didn't do that, but it really can stand on its own as a good movie on its own without having to really rely on the others to lift it up.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it obviously is going to be fitting into the greater chronology of the chronology. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, I think that's chronology.
It's
MCU. A word now.
Yeah, it is now. It wasn't before. It will obviously fit into the greater scope of things, but you could watch it as its own movie. Yeah, there's the references to Iron Man 3 and Trevor and all that stuff. But you didn't really even need to know all that to enjoy that character. You know, it's just a bonus if you kind of do. And I think so. It totally stands on its own. One thing I do want to talk about it with you now that the spoiler reins are off, so to speak, on this one is the post-credit stuff. Specifically, the scene where Wong comes to the restaurant and gets them, and then they're back with the other Avengers checking out the rings and kind of talking about the rings. He's basically joining the Avengers at this point, because he's in a meeting with Captain Marvel, Bruce Banner, I think Rocket. I think those are the three Avengers that they're there with.
Rocket wasn't in there. It was
did I just imagine Rocket? I'm just
it was the chick from the Dora Milaje.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okoye,
yeah.
Yeah. So I guess she's an Avenger now or something. But yeah, I mean, I'm really interested.
Okoye is literally a better hero than Ant-Man. She could totally be an Avenger.
I mean, it seems that she essentially is in this version of things, because I mean, she basically, because even before Black Panther came back in Endgame, even that, in that version of the Avengers that was there in the interim, she was there in the meetings too they were having too. So I guess, you know, she was kind of the Wong.
She's earned her place. Yeah.
So it's what's interesting is it's doing a number of things in that scene. It's setting up future Avengers teams in some way, shape, or form. Like, it's very clear Shang-Chi is going to be part of the Avengers. It's very clear that Captain Marvel will be part of the Avengers. It seems like Okoye and whoever the new Black Panther becomes, or whatever, however that all plays out, will probably be a part of that team as well. But then what's not clear is where things go with Bruce Banner, because the last time we saw Bruce Banner, he was Smart Hulk and his arm was in the same sling it's in now, from getting messed up by doing his version of the snap in Endgame. But now he's back to being regular human Bruce Banner with
Dude,
that same.
Is it just
arm
me, or did he look like he was doing meth?
I think that is real life Mark Ruffalo, what he's going through.
He looks rough.
He did look like a bit of a frazzled Bruce Banner. So I don't know if that's purposeful or if it's just like, hey, we have to do this scene.
He looks a million years old with crack.
I think they probably pulled Mark Ruffalo out of bed that morning and were like, hey, we're doing a post-credit scene. We just thought of this. We want to use Bruce Banner. What are you doing today? He's like, I don't want to do all the Hulk stuff. He's like, no, we're not doing green screen. You're just going to be Bruce Banner. Don't worry about it. We'll figure out it later. Can you just put the sling on? He's like, all right. Yeah, let me just half brush my teeth. I'll be right there. That's how I see it playing out. But yeah, I'm kind of curious where you think some of this stuff is going. Because one, I do think Bruce Banner, I mean, I know Bruce Banner is going to be, it's essentially the same origin that we're going to get for She-Hulk in the Disney Plus series, where he, I think, that donates blood to his cousin and she becomes a Hulk. So I guess he's going to appear in that as regular Bruce Banner. In addition, we also saw the Abomination in this movie. And from the trailers, it wasn't clear if he was just another combatant in this like tournament or something. At the time, I thought it was going to be the Tournament of the Ten Rings or something like that. But that wasn't even a thing in the movie. Instead, he was just kind of having an exhibition fight of sorts at this sort of fight club with Wong. And then we see later when they're in the locker room and the way Wong is speaking to them, they're obviously friends. And Wong, it seems like Wong is actually training him for something else, for something bigger. And that's one that's got my mind spinning a little bit, like where that's all going. Does this tie into the team that what's her name, Elaine Benes, is putting together with US Agent and you know, Yelena Belova and all these sort of anti-versions of some of the heroes we've known? So I am very intrigued by what it's setting up with potentially a new Avengers team, and what it's setting up with the Hulk stuff, and what it's potentially setting up with whatever this thing with Abomination is referencing, because there's something there, and I don't really know what that is.
I was disappointed because you didn't even hear, like, that was Tim Roth, like, yeah, in there. And what's ironic was, as they were filming that, they were also starting to film the She-Hulk show. So he's
going to be in as well.
Yeah, he's returning
we'll
for that. So, like, the fact that Tim Roth didn't even say a word in this film felt kind of one-off. And the way that they kind of treat it is kind of like an inside joke somehow was kind of weird for me. What I will say, and I discussed this with Caleb Franz, was that when you see Wong open up that portal to another place, he's taking him back to a S.H.I.E.L.D. holding cell. So it's like he's busting him out of jail temporarily to do these fights. And I think it's some type of, like, you know, ringer situation where they kind of plot the fight in advance. They kind of allude to that. But that really felt kind of weird for me. And I'll even say that the post credits for this, they'll probably pay off later. But it gave me like some weird vibes, because I feel like they're trying to tie, you know, things together for what the big event of this phase or the next couple phases are going to be, kind of like a new Infinity Saga. But at the same time, it's so strange because we're already halfway through Phase 4. Like, that's the weirdest thing about it, because Phase 3 ends technically with Spider-Man Far From Home. That was a prologue to
are we halfway? I wouldn't think we're halfway. We've actually only
WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Black Widow, then we have you know, Loki and What If and Shang-Chi. Like, that's six projects.
Yeah, I suppose so, but there's a lot more, because I think Phase 4 is considered even like the next 2 years, so I think there's a lot more coming, and
so
there is a lot more.
It just feels odd. Usually they set this up at the beginning of a phase, but here it just kind of felt a little odd.
It feels like Phase 4 is a giant setup to like Phase 5 or whatever comes next, comes with, you know, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men stuff, that's going to be integrated probably in the Phase 5/6 range. And this just feels like a lot of setup for what will probably eventually become Avengers 5 or maybe Secret Wars or something. But it's enough to have me intrigued that I don't really know where it's all going. I just know it is going somewhere.
What I will say is the one thing that I haven't seen many people talk about is the second post-credit scene, which I didn't even know about when I went to go see it the first time. It's the one where basically Shang-Chi's sister takes control of the Ten Rings and is basically bringing it up to speed with her standards. And the end credits basically say the Ten Rings will return. And that actually did disappoint me because I feel like they said that on purpose. Because my complaint with Doctor Strange has been, I feel like with Doctor Strange, they simply introduced him in his own movie so he could just be a partner or side character in other continuing Marvel films. And I thought that was just a one-off thing with his character. But then it's like with Captain Marvel, they're kind of doing the same thing. They set up Captain Marvel just to now kind of be a side character. And even in her own sequel, The Marvels, she's not even the main character in it. It's Kamala Khan, who's going to be introduced in the Ms. Marvel Disney Plus series, and it's also Spectrum, who was introduced in WandaVision. So it's one of these situations where it's like, this is a character, Shang-Chi, where you could actually get like several direct sequels. And Marvel's not saying that they don't want to do direct sequels to Shang-Chi. But, you know, with that, I feel like that was very deliberate. It's like, why would you set up the bad guys and you wouldn't set up the main title character? For me, that just felt kind of weird. And I feel like when you do that, it kind of cheapens their future appearances.
I believe that 10 Rings is not necessarily setting up the Shang-Chi sequel. I think it's setting up yet another Disney Plus show. I believe I read that somewhere. So we'll see. It seems like there's too much, but at the end of the day, you and I can't resist watching this stuff. So,
no, I'll watch it twice.
Yeah. On a loop. Cool. So let's move on to some books we've been reading, because we didn't really get into our books last time we did the potpourri. But I have been checking. Most of what I've been reading has been I've kind of dipped back into the Marvel and DC stuff a little bit lately, after kind of being more stuck in some Image books with a crossover Geiger. I'm still following those as they come out. Geiger, I will say, I have fallen off of a little bit. I'm probably going to finish it because I think it's only 6 issues, but it's kind of slow. I got to be honest. I don't know if you've read that one at all.
No.
I don't think you have. Yeah, you're probably fine. The art's pretty good. The story's pretty good, but it's actually kind of like whatever. So, but yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest thing I've been reading over the last month or two has been Infinite Frontier from DC. Now, I think you've had you started to get it, but then you had some issues getting your issues, I guess.
Yeah. The issue is that when I subscribed to Infinite Frontier, I was living in Virginia. So when I moved to Wisconsin, they don't have a redirect for your shipping address. So like all my other DC books are getting shipped here, because when I moved here to my new apartment outside Milwaukee, I already had a new address. So all my other DC books are coming here, but Infinite Crisis keeps getting sent back to my parents in Virginia. So I have only gotten up to issue 2 right now.
All right. Well, we don't need to go too spoilery on it. Cause you already know about, what's his name? Who's the one with the black ring? Speedy, good old Speedy.
Oh yeah, Black Lantern Arsenal, or Black Lantern Speedy, Red Arrow, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah. I actually enjoyed his addition to the series. I usually don't like when characters just come back, but I think this one was actually done in a way that it kind of makes sense and it plays into the story that
it's pretty cool. Yeah,
but Infinite Frontier, it's one of those things that it's not really, and they're not marketing it as an event book. They haven't actually, it hasn't actually seemed like it's been that hyped up actually, but it's the one that I jumped onto because I'm kind of like a lore chronology buff. Like I kind of always want to know what's going on with the greater scope of the DC universe. So anytime they do one of these, you know, multiversal events or events where they're, you know, addressing the sort of structure of the universe, I'm interested. I just always want to see where it's going. But this didn't, In some ways, it feels like it's the start of an event book, but it's not really an event book itself. Although I won't spoil the last couple issues for you. I'll let you get to them on your own. But it becomes pretty eventy feeling briefly, but then it kind of it kind of brings us out. And essentially at the end of the day, though, it is setting up, of course, it's just setting up another series for us. It's setting up the Justice Incarnate series, which is coming later this year. And that one is going to feature a lot of different multiversal characters. It's going to have the characters it has now. It has the Calvin Ellis Superman. They've also found a way to work Thomas Wayne Batman back into things. So now he's essentially a member of Justice Incarnate. Captain Carrot. Big fan of Captain Carrot.
Yeah, I mean, I really do love Calvin Ellis's dialogue moments of Thomas Wayne Batman. I think that's probably my favorite part.
They make a good couple of, like, buddy cop comedy duo, I'd say.
Yeah, Captain Carrot's been cool. I'm glad they didn't get rid of him at the end of Death Metal.
Yeah, and as a continuity buff, I enjoy little aspects of things. I enjoy characters that sort of live outside continuity. So the big overarching villain kind of meets that, and I won't reveal who it is in case anyone hasn't read it yet. But yeah, it's Darkseid. but also, like, little characters like I really like Psycho Pirate in this, and Psycho Pirate's an interesting character overall because Psycho Pirate always remembers everything. Like, he knows everything that's happened. So he knows about Crisis on Infinite Earths. He knows about Infinite Crisis. He retains the memories of all these events that essentially wipe out universes and rebirth universes. So he's always been, that's kind of been consistent with his character across time here. So I always find his addition and to these stories and the way he speaks about things with the knowledge of these other crises in the past. And I enjoy that, just that the fact of these crisis events, even though they sort of were supposed to wipe slates clean every time, and all they really ever did was confuse things more. But I like that that is actually a part of DC lore. It's a part of the mythology, and it's something that the characters and even now, like, the citizens of the DC universe, or the DC universi, whatever you want to say, acknowledge this thing happens. It's this crisis thing that happens, and there's a multiverse, and people know about it. And now it's almost like many of the characters of the DC universe and the citizens of the DC universe are like us. They're like fans of the comics in that they understand the larger scope of the picture that before only readers of the comics understood. So I find the entire concept interesting. I thought I would hate the DC multiversal stuff more than I do, and I don't know how much they're pushing it as a concept in the actual, you know, in the regular monthly books, which I'm not really reading too much of. But as far as the overall way they're handling this sort of everything matters thing, I gotta say I kind of like it, because there are a lot of interesting characters throughout the history of DC in the DC multiverse, like Calvin Ellis Superman, like freaking Captain Carrot, and it's cool to see these characters come together and in a way that actually interacts with other characters that we know and love from, you know, from the regular DC universe. So I've been enjoying it. It is pretty hefty. I think it's like $5 and was coming out like every 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it feels worth it almost, because, like, you get a lot of story for that book. And I feel like with a lot of the other more expensive comics that are touching that $5-$6 range, they have somewhat sacrificed quality for page count. And you know, the more I read into Infinite Crisis, the more I realize that the Brian Michael
Infinite
Bendis,
Frontier. Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, Infinite Crisis.
Yeah, my bad. The more I read into Infinite Frontier, the more I realize that the Brian Michael Bendis Justice League is just, like, not living up to the hype.
I haven't even sniffed that intentionally.
Like,
I'm not a huge Bendis guy.
I have an issue literally sitting across from me that came in the mail last week, and I haven't read it. I've been reading the Tom Taylor Superman. I finally got my issue one of Superman's Kal-El in, and I have not given it a full read yet just because I've been working. But yeah, I mean, I think DC continues to probably be the best publisher right now. And I wouldn't even say it's because they've been doing anything super amazing. I just think it's because all the other publishers, you know, Image, Valiant, and especially Marvel, they've been really slacking. And, you know, I mean, the only criticism I really have for DC is that after Death Metal in 2020, they went into that future state phase. And what's funny is I was back in my parents in Virginia last week getting ready to sell a bunch of my shit. And I had to actually get rid of some comic books that I just don't want to carry with me. So I gave a whole bunch away to a friend's kid, and I gave him a ton of my Infinite Frontier comics. And I'm sorry, no, a bunch of my Future State comics. Future State came out between January and February of 2021. He's like, oh, Future State, I heard about this. Is this important? And I'm like, no, it's not important. It's not. You enjoy that, though, because I spend a lot of money on those. So you enjoy those. But yeah, I mean, I'm still sticking to my limited stuff from DC. Superman, Son of Kal-El, Justice League, Batman, The Adventure Continues, which is on its second season right now, and Infinite Frontier, when I can get my folks to go ahead and mail me those copies back.
Well, speaking of future state, one book that I have been reading monthly and enjoying, but it was a little confusing to me, and now I think I kind of get why, is Superman and the Authority by Grant Morrison, art by Mikkel Janin, I believe is how you say his name, but I don't know. Never heard anyone else say it.
Better attempt than me.
But I'm very much enjoying the story and the art after, you know, it got me in from the beginning because I enjoyed it just enough to see where it's going. And I have actually enjoyed where it's going. And the only thing I was kind of confused by is what's going on, like why it's even happening in the first place, because it seems like this is a different version of Superman. He's slightly older. He has less powers. I finally figured it out. This was supposed to be a future state book, or like a future state or 5G book. So it is supposed to take place in that timeline or in that sort of era. So that's why I was a little confused by it, because it came out after that stuff. But when you put it into the context of you know, that 5 years in the future thing, suddenly it starts to make more sense, especially when the characters reference different things. There's Natasha Irons in it, Steel's daughter, and she's as old as she should be, and you know, that actually makes sense more now. So, you know, it does make a little more sense to me, and I'm really enjoying the book. It's really interesting because it's Grant Morrison on the Authority. He has this character Manchester Black. Now, I don't know if you realize this, Manchester Black was originally created as a part of this team called the Elite, and the Elite was actually a parody of the Authority by Warren Ellis. That, and so the Authority was by Warren Ellis. Grant Morrison creates the Elite as a parody of them because he fucking hates Warren Ellis for whatever reason, and now he's writing the book The Authority that was originally by Warren Ellis that he is now writing with his own character in it. Oof. Manchester Black. Yeah, so enjoy that one. But basically it's a depowered Superman. It's not like he has no powers, he just has like less powers. He's less powerful for some reason that I'm still not entirely sure of, but essentially he decides he's gonna put, you know, his son is off doing his own thing, being the regular Superman of this time, so he decides he's gonna put together a team to handle other stuff, to handle stuff that, you know, that is not being handled by the normal superheroes. And so he recruits Manchester Black, he recruits Midnighter and Apollo. Basically he's trying to recruit people that when combined, they could almost be like one regular powered Superman. That's kind of like the vibe I'm getting from it. And I'm just really enjoying it. Like the art's really excellent. I'm enjoying what my favorite part of this is just the interaction between the various characters. You've got Midnighter and Apollo. You've got June Moon / Enchantress. Let's see if we can do this one, Remzo. Remzo, what can you tell me about June Moon and or the Enchantress?
Dr. June Moon, who I think was originally introduced in Wonder Woman. I may or may not be correct about that. You probably remember her from the 2016 Suicide Squad movie. Basically, Dr. June Moon is an archaeologist that went to an Aztec temple in Mexico, and as she was in these mysterious caverns, she went ahead and opened up a crate that had some, like, you know, ancient magic shit in there, and she was possessed by a sorceress named the Enchantress. So it's kind of like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde scenario, but a little bit sexier.
Yes, much sexier, actually. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying not just the sort of grouping of the characters, but how they tend to interact with each other. Like seeing June Moon / Enchantress interact with like Manchester Black. And Manchester Black, interestingly enough, he's kind of like the field leader of the team. Like Superman's the organizer and the leader, but when they actually go out in the field, Manchester Black kind of has taken over the role of like the on the ground leader. And it's just a really interesting dynamic. I'm not sure how it's going to tie into the greater DC universe or if it even is. Now, one thing that really confused me about this is in Infinite Frontier, you know, you see some shots at the end of each issue and it shows Bones' notebook where he's taking notes about things. And one of the notes is, why is Superman forming a new authority? But Infinite Frontier takes place like now, and that takes place later, and that's why it's confusing to me. So maybe there's still some kind of multiversal element here. Maybe that's just an editorial mistake. It very well just could be that they didn't have
DC has been having those issues more often, because when you saw the handoff between Brian Michael Bendis from when he went on in the Superman books to Justice League, the current Superman writers in Action Comics, not including Tom Taylor, because his whole thing didn't start till like July. There have been some like rather obvious continuity errors. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but like DC editorial, ever since they went into this new Infinite Frontier phase, there have been like little weird moments that people have been catching, and it's out and people are bringing it up and DC's not answering it. And people are like, did you guys not realize this? So
yeah, so maybe that's the most likely explanation for why that's being referenced when it shouldn't really be being referenced at that time. So yeah, it could just be some editor was like, oh, there's a Superman, the Authority book. Cool. Put a note in there about it. So it all ties in, even though it shouldn't necessarily tie in, but I am enjoying the book. Otherwise I actually would actually recommend it. If you're a fan of Grant Morrison, if you're a fan of like quirky superhero team up stuff, then I definitely recommend it.
I don't know what your opinion of this is, Mark, but what I've noticed, well,
that's
is,
why we have a show where we talk about our opinions.
Yeah. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. I feel like we're in a lull period for comics. And it's mainly because of the lack of stuff that I'm really excited for. I'm collecting a lot of series because I just, you know, I like them. I like getting new books and seeing what's out. But like, there's nothing really that kind of grabs me. And I feel like, you know, and I saw this when I was going through my stack of comics back home. And even when we go ahead and pull out stories to read on the show, it's like what I've noticed is that there are real big high points of great titles and stories that are coming out during a certain year or so. And then there are real low points. And I feel that between like 2019... 2020, you had a lot of really great books coming out. And now it's like towards the latter end of 2020 through most of this year so far, it's just been kind of lackluster. So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe in the next year or so, at least one or two of the major publishers will just have a really good year long run, because, and I don't want to just be like, oh, well, modern comic books suck or anything, but it's like even the stuff that's good doesn't get me as hyped as I felt for some stuff that came out even a couple of years ago.
I'm very picky nowadays with the books that I actually go and physically buy or actually pay money to read, especially because now like I tend to really enjoy reading older books more than I'm enjoying a lot of the modern stuff. And I don't want to sound like a boomer here again, but you know, I've been enjoying just revisiting a lot of stuff. And it's obviously one reason I just enjoy doing the show so much, because I enjoy going back and reading older stories that I already read and am rereading, like 20 or 30 years of time passage. It's kind of a lot. So a lot of stories that I've read, I kind of don't even know them at all. I'm like, oh, I like a lot of the panels like seem familiar. The art seems familiar, but I don't necessarily like, I can still be surprised by a story now because it's been enough time that has passed. So like a lot of the older books that I even own and read almost read like new books to me, even though I know they're old and you know, in the box or what have you. So it really takes a lot for me to get excited about modern comics, and I'm very picky with those. So there's a few comics here and there that I've been reading, but I can't say I'm like overall, you know, if you had to tell me either today you can read only comics from the 90s or only comics that come out now for the rest of your life, I would take my comics from the 90s.
Any day of the week. That's not even a second thought.
Yeah. So I will continue to very much pick and choose based on, it's basically something that I have to see is coming out and think it's an interesting because either I like the writer or I find the concept intriguing. So for Infinite Frontier, I just want to see where things are going with the greater DC universe. With Superman, the Authority, I've always enjoyed Grant Morrison. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a huge Grant Morrison fan because there's a lot of stuff that I find too confusing.
Would you rate him above or below Jonathan Hickman?
Oh, he's above Jonathan Hickman.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. No, I can see where the comparison comes in, though, because they are both writers that like to create gigantic, complex.
To remind you how smart they are.
They like to remind you how smart they are and how much they have figured everything out and how much they have planned things out. But no, I mean, I like Jonathan Hickman. I will always like Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four run. I think it's a fantastic run. It's maybe my second favorite Fantastic Four run. But yeah, I mean, his other stuff, it's touch and go for me. A lot of it, I guess we could say. But no, I would put Grant Morrison, honestly, leaps and bounds above Jonathan Hickman. And maybe that's just a body of work type of thing. But I can definitely understand the comparison for sure. No, but for me, I typically enjoy Grant Morrison books even when I don't love them, if that makes sense. Because to me, he always takes a unique approach to characters and to stories. And I always do appreciate that, even if I don't end up loving the final product.
He is his own unique flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's really it. He's one of those guys where it's like when you read some of his stuff, it's like you might not know it's him immediately until you look at the front of the cover or something, but you just know it's him.
Yeah. And there's some Grant Morrison that's just too complex, too convoluted. To me, Final Crisis, I enjoy it. I enjoy it, but it's really complicated and kind of confusing, even if you've been following all the other stories that led up to it. But this, I like this because it's a fresh start. And I think the fact that it is sort of in a, I don't know if it's a separate DC universe or if it's a future DC universe, maybe that's considered an alternate timeline. I don't know. Whatever it is, though, it does feel like kind of a fresh start for me, for this version of Superman and for these characters that he's brought together. And for this team existing, and it really does feel fresh because it's such a mix of characters. It's a mix of Superman plus some minor heroes, some of which are may or may not be from the main DC continuity. There may be one that's sort of multiversal, combined with reformed villain. I always like a good reformed villain story, which we have with Manchester Black and the Enchantress, and combined with some old favorites of mine from the Wildstorm days, but before they merged with DC. So I mean, I've always enjoyed the characters of Midnighter and Apollo, even if they are very blatantly Batman and Superman ripoffs. They're unique enough in their personalities and their actual stories that they actually can be done as interesting characters when handled the right way, and I think they're being handled really well in this story. So that's probably my number one pick, honestly, for a monthly book from a major publisher right now. If I was going to choose one for someone to check out, it would be Superman the Authority.
Is it a limited series or is it going to be ongoing?
I believe it is. I believe it might only be 6 or 8 issues. And I think it's just the fourth that just dropped. But I'm really enjoying it.
It's getting way more praise than Crime Syndicate did. I feel like people were excited for Crime Syndicate for like 2 issues. And then it was
that was me. Yeah, Crime Syndicate, I think I enjoyed the first 3 issues, and then the last like 4, when I got to issue 4, 5, or 6, I was kind of like, okay.
Each issue had like diminishing levels of excitement. By the time I have the full series, by the time I was done, I was like, okay, what was the point of this?
And you can only go so far with a group of, you know, evil bad guys. Like they're good for a short story here and there when they come over and interact with the Justice League, but
they're not good on their own. I don't think if you said that you were going to make a Crime Syndicate series, that was ongoing. It's not like Dark Avengers. I think Dark Avengers is like the best series of bad guys who are at the center of the book. Like it's better than Thunderbolts. It's better than Suicide Squad. It's better than all those attempts. And it's like for Crime Syndicate, like I feel like I've always wanted them to be like, you know, be able to like stand on their own and really compete with a lot of the ongoing monthly titles. But with this limited series, like I get it was like a reboot and all this stuff, but it didn't sell me at the end. Speaking of which, because I know we're running up on time, you've been reading Dark Ages from Marvel.
I have. Well, I read the first issue anyway.
Okay, so I'm not going to buy that shit. I didn't buy Heroes Reborn. I'm not going to buy this, but I need to know like what is going on.
Well, that's funny because it's written by a guy you've praised a number of times on this program. It's a Tom Taylor book, so I'm surprised that hasn't intrigued you enough.
Is he writing it?
Yeah,
I actually didn't know he was writing it.
Maybe I was caught off guard.
Well, now I feel like I have to. It is. Well, I mean, there's only one Tom Taylor in comics. I feel stupid that I didn't know. I follow him on Twitter.
You should feel stupid as a self-professed Tom Taylor.
Okay. I am a bad Tom Taylor fan. So go ahead and tell me this so that I can impulsively buy issue 1 tomorrow at the comic shop.
Cool. So basically the plot is, and it does take a pretty long time to get to the main plot. It's kind of a little bit of a swerve because at first it appears that the whole thing is that they're battling this new villain who comes from space. His name is the Unmaker. He's not important. I'll just tell you that right now. Although if you want to read this, I don't know how spoilery I should really get here.
Just do it.
No, this is fine. You can know all this. Basically, at the end of the day, the way they have to how they have to defeat this guy, there's like this like power surge on Earth, and they lose the power. So Earth has no electricity anymore. So then we go forward 5 years later. And basically we're seeing the Marvel Universe after not having electricity for 5 years.
So this isn't like an event book. This is like another multiverse.
It's a what if. It's essentially a what if that's okay. Not called a what if. Yeah, it's one of those, I want to do a story that's not connected to everything, but I don't want to call it a what if because that's stupid kind of things. I think that's basically the deal here.
Got it.
Like Deceased, you know, it's just a cool story that Tom Taylor got to do for DC, and that's it. So that one, I think they had like a million different versions of Deceased. But this is interesting enough that it's intriguing to me. And I mean, I didn't love like the initial battle and how they put this team together to fight the Unmaker. I thought that was kind of dumb. Like they chose like basically they chose like 5 characters to go into this battle. It was Scarlet Witch, Vision, Invisible Woman, The Thing, and Doctor Strange. And but like, it's like, I don't know, just the, some of the logic was dumb. It's like, oh, and if we need something, someone strong, we got the thing. It's like, well, if you need someone strong, there's like 20 characters that I could think of that you would choose before
the Hulk.
Thing. Like, yeah, like he's strong, but he's not like one of the strongest in the universe that we should, that we want to, if we're going to get our team down to these only five people that are going to save the world, blah, blah, blah.
They need,
but anyway,
Bug Person.
Yeah, he couldn't even beat Bug Person. Yeah, they had to zap away with a golden freaking frog because he couldn't even just take out Bug Person by himself. But yeah, I mean, that story is just the setup to the whole thing. It's not really important. It's just to set up the fact that there's this EMP blast and it takes out the Earth's power. So then we fast forward 5 years and we don't really get into that too much. So I'm intrigued to see where it goes. But can I spoil the end of this?
Just do it.
I mean, yeah, you might have even seen it anywhere, but at the end, we're introduced to a new team of, I don't know if they're heroes or anti-heroes, but it's a new team that's led by Apocalypse, and it includes Lady Deathstrike, Beast, She-Hulk, Reed Richards, and now it wasn't clear to me who this was in the beginning, but I've read who it was, and now that I see, look at the art, it actually makes sense. Apparently, it is Miles Morales, Venom. It is a Venomized Miles Morales who's part of the Apocalypse team here. So it's not really clear what's going on. We just kind of meet this team, and that's kind of our cliffhanger. And there's also a version of Iron Man there. So it's not clear who's in that Iron Man suit. I don't believe it's Tony.
If it's fucking Riri Williams.
I hope it's Riri.
I am not spending a dollar on that shit.
I don't believe it's Riri. It actually looks like it's someone large. They kind of made it clear that it's someone very large because the armor is a lot bigger. So I think it's, I don't think it's Riri. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty confident of that one. And then Beast is like the, you know, remember that era for like a few years where Beast like turned into more of a beast? Like he looked like an animal.
It looks like a cat person.
Yeah, like a cat. Yeah, this kind of looks like a cooler version of that Beast. Because that Beast I thought kind of looked really lame, but this one actually looks really cool. So that's how you end the issue. And I don't know where it's going to go, but you know, I the funny thing is about all this is that the reason I read it is because you praised Tom Taylor so much and I saw it was by Tom Taylor. So I was,
I feel so stupid. Like I literally feel so stupid. I didn't know that he was writing this book.
Yeah, you should. But the art's really good too. And
like on none of the, like I haven't read any of the stuff. To me, it looks like another Marvel event book. And I will say, I think one reason why I was confused was because
I don't think I'd be interested if it was a regular Marvel event because that would turn me off. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I've had enough of these.
Because you need to collect 20 variant covers. Like in none of the marketing for it did I see any mention of Tom Taylor. So like really, I had no clue it was him. But now since I know it's him, now I'm really interested.
I believe this is just like a self-contained. I'm not sure how many issues it is. I'm just going to guess 6, but I don't actually know. It's kind of a what if Elseworlds type tale. So, it's not the best story I've ever read. I don't want to like heap praise on it. Like you're going to be blown away here, but it's an interesting enough concept that I'm curious to see where he's going with these upcoming issues.
You got to get yourself a hardcover copy of Deceased, especially for Halloween. You'll like it.
All right, well, maybe I should join the Second Print Patreon at the Epic Crossover level, and maybe you'll send me one, just like you did to one of our other patrons.
I have sent that book to so many people. I freaking love Deceased. I think it's one of the best books to have come out in the past 5 years, and I love basically everything Tom Taylor touches.
Yeah, it's good. I went back and read it, too. Not the physical copy version, but our friends at Hoopla helped us out with that.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so now since I know Tom Taylor is gracing Marvel with Dark Ages, and yeah, I think I'll pick it up.
Yeah, so that's my recommendation. One more thing I want to mention that I didn't even finish the issue yet, but I was going to try to see if I had time to read it before I talked to you. I didn't quite have time before the show, and there's a couple issues out now, so I want to do a deeper read of it, but I want to tee you up for it, so maybe we can talk about it next week, because these guys are living the dream recently. There's another comic book podcast out there. I don't like to promote the competitors, but I will in this case. It's called Variant the Podcast, and one of the hosts of that show, his name is Aris Quinones, and he's living the dream. He's living the Second Print dream, where you start a podcast, you make connections into the industry, and then one day you start a comic book, and through your connections in the industry, you're able to get that comic book made. So he has started a book. He's the co-writer along with Frank Barbieri, who's a longtime comic book writer. It's called Astonishing Times. I have not even finished the first issue, I want to say again, but just by browsing through, I think I'm like 10-15 pages in. I was really sucked in really quickly, and I really, really enjoy the art, and I really think I'm going to continue to enjoy where the story's going. So that's really all I'm going to say about that book, but it is on Comixology. If you get Comixology Unlimited, because this is actually published by Comixology, it's a Comixology original. So I'm not sure if that means, I think it might also be available in print format, but it's available on Comixology Unlimited for anyone. I mean, that's a really good deal too. If you buy digital comics at all, again, I'm selling all these products here today that I don't get any commission from. I'm selling you the Cinemark app. I'm selling you Comixology Unlimited, but it's like $6 a month and you get access to a ton of comic books. Plus any new comics that come out, you get like 15% off. So if you buy a lot of like new digital comics, it pays for itself very easily. And, but yeah, that is available on there. I'm just going to leave it at that because I want to read more, but I saw enough that it really did intrigue me. And hey, I got to say, I'm happy for Aris Quiñones as someone who is also a podcaster and a lifelong comic book fan. I know for him, it's just got to be the greatest thing to actually see your name on a book that's been published. So I'm excited for him and I'm excited to keep reading it.
Awesome stuff. Well, I think we got through everything today.
I think so. I think that's all I had on my mind.
You want to wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up. I just implore you guys, as always, to follow along with us. Follow us on social media. You can follow us at Second Print Pod pretty much everywhere. We are on Twitter, we are on the Facebooks, we are on the Instagrams. Come chat with us, come join us. You can also join us in our private group, the Second Print Comics Fan Zone, by becoming a patron of this program. You can help us live the dream. Maybe someday, if we can grow this puppy big enough, we can be like Aris Quiñones and we can leverage this thing into comic books of our own. But until then, we promise to be here every single Wednesday, giving you our hot takes, mostly on stories of yesteryear, the stories that Remzo and I were inspired by as comic book fans. But every fourth Wednesday, or not always fourth, sometimes it's a fifth once in a while, but every last Wednesday of the month, we'll be doing what you heard today, where we call it the Second Print Potpourri. We'll be looking at whatever we've been watching, whatever we've been reading, just like we did today. So continue to join us for this journey. And as always, friends, don't forget to read comics.
Change the world!
And change the world.
Good night, America.
Buenas noches.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.